5.22.
Welcome to the Epcot Podcast 17.17. We're in the near future. Something weird has happened to my voice.
I'm going to break this out. Over many years? Six?
Well, apparently 8 years down the road, I turn into Ren and Stimpy after smoking 30 years of cigarettes.
You know.
Anyway, that's the beginning to our podcast.
Oh, we're still recording. Great. Fantastic. Let's do this.
I didn't think Jordan Poole's game winner deserved anything less weird.
I mean,
because it was a little weird.
It was pretty weird, but it was kind of the greatest thing ever.
Yes, there was a six-man jumping group hug in the room after that shot went down. Turned your frown upside down, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And Michigan gets to the Sweet 16 for the fourth time in 6 years.
John Beilein's pretty good at this.
Yeah,
he's
real
good at this.
At some point, we're going to have the "Is John Beilein an elite coach?" conversation. Because he's always been a very good coach. But, you know, elite is like, what, top 10 probably? How many elite coaches are there?
Oh, I mean, yeah, I mean, you probably throw it like a group of somewhere between 5 to 10 guys in there as the real top tier.
And like,
you got to put. I mean, especially if you want to take into account, you know, the
bags.
Bags.
But we're not.
But we're not going to take into account bags because that is part of being a coach is bags.
Bags.
But even while not handing out bags, John Beilein has put together one of the best programs in the country.
I think he's on the edge.
I think he's there.
Well, all right. Well, you got Roy Williams, self, Jay Wright,
Coach K.
K, I guess Izzo.
Yeah, you put Izzo in there.
I guess
you put Izzo in there.
Steve Alford.
Oh, I mean, if we're putting Steve Alford in there,
then... No, we're not putting Steve Alford in there.
Okay.
What possible?
Sanity check. I apologize.
God.
Sorry. I was looking at my screen. I was looking for coach names. I wasn't totally paying attention. You caught me very off guard.
Oh, wow.
That's
a coconut ranch for
Luke Yaklich.
Come on, man. He's not even a head coach.
Mark Few, I would say, Mark Few. Is somebody who is very much in that conversation.
So
but I think Beilein is...
Cal,
yes.
Bags.
But so also manages to get the bags working together quite well. I do think Cal is actually a pretty good coach. Huggy Bear? How are we feeling about Huggy Bear?
How are we feeling about Huggy Bear? Let us see. Let us look at the recent history of West Virginia basketball.
I mean, it's pretty good.
25th, 8th, 7th, and 12th last 4 years.
I take Beilein.
In KenPom, I know. I mean, if Huggy Bear, but...
So, I mean, we're having a tough time coming up with 10, especially after, I mean, we haven't mentioned Tony Bennett yet, but things happened this weekend.
Tony Bennett is 8, yes.
Yeah.
Mick Cronin hasn't had a top 10 team until this year, so no.
No. I mean, we're already reaching here. We're reaching. I mean, because now you're going to start getting guys like Jamie Dixon.
Jamie Dixon.
I mean, look what happened to Pitt after he left, and look what happened to TCU when he arrived.
Yeah, but his last few years at Pitt were like 8 seed.
They were rough, but obviously Pitt should not have fired him.
Greg Marshall?
Or at least not hired.
Greg Marshall?
Yeah, Greg Marshall. Mm-hmm. I would absolutely give you Greg Marshall.
So, but now we're getting into guys where it's like questionable just on the court. Whether this guy is performing better.
Yeah.
Chaka Smart.
I was going to see how long you could hold a straight face after that and did not get much of a chance.
So if you missed it, I didn't.
You were trying to troll.
I wasn't trying to troll
so savagely. I refuse to believe this. This was directed at me.
It wasn't directed at you.
This is targeted harassment. I've reported it to Twitter.
No, I wasn't specifically trying to troll you. indirectly, like, it was like I was just shooting my shot and it hit your battleship.
It sure did.
But if you look at their recent resumes, it's like, it's pretty close.
I mean, I will admit it's closer than I would probably like to admit. But in case, I don't think we fully explained that Brian was saying that Shaka Smart is a worse coach than Tommy Amaker.
Yes. And I almost believe that.
Almost.
Almost. It's close.
Yeah. And then
they're both two. They both have two wins in the tournament.
I got a little mad online.
Since to like 2010-11.
I mean, and Tommy Amaker did.
And one of them's at Harvard. Then.
But it's easier to get in the tournament when you're at Harvard. I mean, it is admittedly harder to win games once you're there, but.
I don't know, man.
Yeah. I prefer John Beilein. Let's go with that. I would say he's a borderline top five coach right now.
Okay.
And
I think he's an obvious top 10 coach.
Obvious top 10 coach, borderline top five. And
so
and in terms of tacticians, in game coaches in the country.
If you disregard the bag.
You're going to be hard pressed to find guys, especially now that he has delegated the defense to Jaklic, you're going to be hard pressed to find somebody who's better at the strategic aspect.
All right, we would like to thank our sponsors
before we get into the just complete Jordan Poole love fest that is about to come.
So our sponsors are Tommy Amaker, Underground Printing, The Bow Store, The Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Homeshire Lending, Peak Wealth Management, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Lantana Hummus, Human Element, Ecotelligent Homes, and Michigan Law Grad. It's better if Tommy Amaker is one of our sponsors, because then...
I mean, he should be paying me back for what he did.
Oh, God. He was an upstanding gentleman who got Michigan to the verge of the tournament several times after picking up for the scraps of the Ellerbe era.
Yeah, that's one way to look at it. Can we talk about fun things? Jordan Poole hit a really awesome shot.
Okay.
Let's do that.
Okay.
Jordan Poole hit an awesome shot, man.
Well, talk about that as much as you want. How about that?
Okay. So first of all, Kelvin Sampson really screws this up.
Okay.
Because he doesn't put anybody on the inbounder.
I know, but it's Liver, so he's at like 6'8". He's not a point guard.
But Livers can't move. Because this is out of a timeout.
Okay.
So he has multiple options and just a clear look, and he's able to fire a hard pass to Marr.
Yeah, but it's like short of the halfway line.
But he's able to catch it while squaring up and before a defender can get fully out to him. So he's able to catch, turn, and get some dribbles in. And then he gets space. And then Poole is open.
Ish.
Ish. The defender gives him just enough space. Closes out a little hard. Gives him just enough space. I mean, they were also running out of time. So you need. I mean, that was the first option on that play, as Beilein talked about after the game.
I think the first option, it felt like Marr was supposed to like have something similar to the Maryland game, and they cut that off.
Yeah, they definitely wanted to take a look. I mean, if the path to the rim was there and they had enough time, that was, a preferred option. The way that play works most of the time in terms of how the clock runs down, the way defenses play it, that pull shot's usually the...
But if they put someone on the inbounder, isn't it more likely that Michigan gets to execute what they want? All you need is... You don't have
to... I mean, you might be able to get more of a drive from Marr, but he's going to have to come back closer to the ball, a lot closer to the ball, and then cover a lot more of the court.
The pass is higher risk, but I think it's more like, it's like a blitz. He's more open.
I don't like
man-to-man coverage.
I would much rather have him catching the ball running back towards the inbounder at the 3-point line than catching the ball while squaring up at midcourt, even if you have an extra defender back. And their extra defender back didn't really matter that much. Let's be honest.
I just think it's one of those things.
I think Sampson misplayed it. Either way, ridiculous shot by Poole, especially considering he manages to catch that and square. Like, he really squares up in an instant. And gets that shot off, and also does the MJ leg kick out to try to draw a foul, because that is just how he does things.
I think that was a foul.
It was close.
It
was close either way. It was a very hard closeout. If the ball had not gone in, I might be feeling differently today about whether or not that was a foul. At the moment, I don't care, because it went in.
You don't care about anything.
Yeah, no, I'm just floating.
And then Poole, like... pulls the Barry Sanders on the dog pile. He's like,
he just takes. I mean, the reverse back in front of the Houston bench was pretty beautiful because that was a sharp cut.
You can see his lateral explosiveness as he tries to flee
the
dog pile. Absolutely,
that's why we're thinking he's going to be a real good defender before long.
And then the walk-ons catch him because they're crafty.
Yes, yeah,
and they know
to double back.
They know that they need to lay a trap.
Yeah, play the field, get the positioning.
Dig a big hole and put a bunch of brush over it.
Yeah. Get a pincer movement going.
Yeah,
they were good.
So they successfully tackle Poole, and then we get kind of an iconic shot of Michigan's dog pile, and then one of the Houston players who has died on the court.
Yeah,
and you feel for the Houston players.
You sure do. I mean, because those guys played a heck of a game.
Maybe not so much for some of the people in the crowd.
You know.
And that's all we're going to say about that.
That's all we're going to say. That was a heck of an opponent, a heck of a game.
It wasn't really a heck of a game.
A heck of a finish. Let's go with a heck of a finish.
I mean,
because there were some whistles.
I don't want to headline this. But
yeah,
it's impossible not to. This was a total ref show.
It was a ref show,
and it made this game just completely disgusting.
And it was a ref show. I mean. It was a ref show both ways. The ref show, I would say, impacted Michigan more, especially in the first half.
Well, especially because, Wagner hits a couple threes, and then he gets hit with just an absurd fourth foul.
Yeah, the one where he's just
fighting
trying
for
to...
post position.
Yeah, and doesn't
even And they
really...
show the replay, and the announcers are like...
I don't see it.
I don't see anything.
Yeah, and there were a couple of those where...
It seemed like on about half of Michigan fouls, I'd go to the replay, and it would be like, I don't even see where the contact is.
Yeah.
And it's really frustrating.
There were a couple the other way on Houston.
Duncan got like a free one-on-one at one point because someone brushed his arm.
Yeah.
You know, at that point, Michigan is like, they've already committed like 9 fouls. Houston is in the double bonus, and Michigan has like... They're like 2 or 3 away from the one. I guess they were in the 1-on-1.
Yeah.
But at one point, fouls are like 9-3, and you're like, all right, well, here comes the
flurry of makeup calls. And
we did get them, but the overall effect on this game was just fairly tragic.
It really slowed it down and chopped it up. And yeah, it was ugly.
Like the 5-point play that Michigan got, that was just kind of like,
I'll take it. I'll take it. You don't see that very often.
You don't.
I mean, you really don't see that often.
you do not.
It was, yeah. What was grating again, and I think this is the second straight game where this happened, they called the game completely different in the first half of how they called it in the second.
So, like, they were really good about respecting verticality in the first half, because Gray was driving
and letting the teams play for the most part.
And Gray was driving in on Z a lot, and he'd be in good guarding position. He'd have his arms vertical. Gray would initiate contact into him and put up a tough shot, and that's a no call.
Yeah, I mean, I thought, and actually, that was the one thing that I think the refs handled pretty well for most of the game was Gray initiating contact.
In the second half,
he did get a couple of them, but I thought, given the way that he was playing.
Have been worse.
Simpson does not commit a personal foul in this game.
No.
But so I would say, considering the way he was, how physically he was defending Gray, and I thought he was doing a fantastic job. I do not think those are fouls, but they were calling some phantom fouls. So I'm surprised that
getting hammered
didn't get
in the chest is not physical play. It is getting hammered in the chest. There was
Wagner got shouldered in the face, and that was a foul on Wagner.
They reviewed it to see if it was a flagrant on the other team.
Yes.
There was a block called on Marr where Gray went directly into his chest, and he's an on-ball defender. That should never, ever, ever be a block. If you're in legal guarding position and you are an on-ball defender and you get hammered in the chest, that is a charge every time.
Yep.
They just hit Michigan with a very similar call. And that was absurd. The Robinson verticality thing where in the second half, Gray goes right into his chest and that's Robinson's fourth.
Yep. His fifth was borderline. I mean, I think you give it to him.
His hands come down.
The way they were calling it at that point, yeah.
Davis just goes into his chest over and over again. And it's like, so it was a very frustrating, especially in the second half where it's just, they're, the whistle keeps blowing, and you know, you can tell like when neutral fans on Twitter are just extremely frustrated.
Yeah, or just screaming ref show. It wasn't it wasn't just us.
No, like there's
Robbie Collins out there saying ref show.
Yeah, B Predict was also, I follow a Texas fan who was like, these guys are going to be tried at the Hague. Like, and none of it was like because it was slanted either way. It was just the whole game was a complete disaster.
Beeline's favorite ref, Terry Weimer, was out there on this one. Who's like the only guy who's able to get Beeline to commit a technical. Also, one of the officials from Thursday's game was on this one, too, apparently. So, and then I think a Mountain West / Pac-12 guy. So we got a nice confluence of crap for this one on the officiating end of things. There was one instance where it kind of worked out, which was the late Charles Matthews rebound foul after the somehow did not fall tip-in was a phantom foul but stopped the clock really fast. Yeah. And that turned out to be huge. So thanks for that.
Yeah.
I would like to see the whistle loosen up a bit the rest of the tournament, or just call it like you keep calling the first halves, like one of those.
But other than that, Michigan's defense puts in a superlative performance.
They have been tremendous throughout the entire last month. They're the second best defensive team in the country over the last month.
So Corey Davis, who's the sharpshooter, who's got, you know, hits 43% on a huge number of threes, gets off three in this game.
Yeah.
And in five of the last eight games, he has had 10 or more attempts from deep.
Yeah.
They have a couple other sharpshooter type guys come off the bench there, collectively 2 for 7. It's only Rob Gray going 4 for 8. One, because Jaron Simmons
just forgets to guard him on a play.
Yeah, and then he had a couple Rob Gray trademarks where he's just like, let's throw this at the rim and see if it goes in. It goes in.
You tip the cap on that one.
And you can't really do anything about those, but Michigan holds Houston to, you know, 39% on just 18 threes. And then once it got inside the arc, it was just Gray going over and over again. He's 4-14 from the floor in this game.
And like is clearly frustrated by how good the defense is on him because he is not used to being guarded like that.
He's like on the ground and he's like hitting the ground because he's just like, where's the foul call? And I'm like, there's no foul, buddy.
Yeah.
And then Devin Davis is also 4 of 12, and their big idea was to post him up on Duncan for a large portion of the game.
Yeah, they especially tried to do that a lot early, and it was like, by all means.
And Davis gets to the line a bunch, and that's the only thing keeping the Houston offense off of life support is that they
said a 67% free throw shooter starts 8 for 8 from the line.
Yeah. And they get 22 free throw attempts in this game, which is like, that's a lot.
It is.
And then you get, you know, some putbacks or whatever, and they managed to get up to just under a point per possession, but they had to work for every single one of those.
They only get 8 assists in this game. They turn it over 10 times. Michigan comes up with 5 blocks. They just make you work so hard to get buckets at this point.
This is not a game that any other Beeline team can win in this way.
No, they're good to go 8 for 30 on threes. Have your best player get basically taken out of the first half of the game and never really get into the rhythm of the game other than like a couple 3-pointers in the second half. Beeline's point guard goes 1 for 7 from the field and scores 4 points. I mean, this is just, it's a completely different team from anything I'm used to watching. It's unbelievable. And then like to see like, you know, Wagner gets into foul trouble early and we see Teske come in and Houston tries to go at Teske.
Why would they?
First of all, it's like, why are you doing this?
It was strange.
But second of all, it was like, holy, like this dude is dominant. Like Teske is an absolutely dominant post defender right now.
I mean, well, my favorite thing is that, so they have this guy named Breon Brady, who's their starting center.
Mm-hmm.
And their first 2 possessions of the game, they decide to post him up on Wagner. They get a couple of buckets.
Yes.
He misses his only other shot of the game, and he plays a total of 6 minutes.
Yeah.
Because he gets 4 fouls, and it's just like,
no, you're done.
This is exactly what your stats say you are.
Yeah.
But yeah, the other attempt was on Teske, and I was like, why are you even trying to do this?
Yeah, and the attempt, like, there was a very marked difference in where he was able to establish position before that shot. and then also in terms of how well the shot was contested. Wagner is obviously still an extremely important player to this team. They do not win this game without his three-pointers in the second half. But, man, it's really quite nice to have a bench this good with a real, like, a backup center who's really playing nearly at the level of Wagner right now.
Yes.
In a very different way, but it's...
Michigan doesn't win this game if John Teske's not on the roster.
Absolutely. And in another stark departure from a lot of past Beeline teams, they don't win this without the bench at all. Because they, I mean, I know, well, Duncan Robinson kind of doesn't
technically
count.
Bench.
He does play 30 minutes, but man, I mean,
I think they could have won it without Poole. I'm glad you interpreted that as a joke, because you're not trying to fight me right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I have not leapt across the table. Also, a shout out to John Teske for going 6-for-8 from the free throw line.
The strange thing about this game is, you know, they do the whole switching thing, and then you have Rockman pulling up from three, and those are usually good shots. He goes 0-for-6.
Yeah.
You know, Simpson has a couple of good looks at three, and like you expect maybe one of those to drop.
Absolutely.
It didn't really feel like the shot quality Michigan was experiencing from beyond the arc warranted 8-for-30. And there were like three air balls in there, and it just felt like a very strange. I didn't like, at some point, I think Duncan airballed a three, a good look.
And he airballed a wide open three. And I was like, what is happening?
That's exactly what I said. I had no idea what I was watching. And I don't know if it was the voodoo in that building, because they didn't exactly light it up the previous week.
No.
Or some sort of weird hex on the city of Wichita, Kansas, which explained a lot about Wichita, Kansas. I know nothing about Wichita. Sure. I know it's in Kansas.
Yeah.
It's the home of Kansas State University. Kansas University? The
Wichita
University
State.
Of Ah! Tip of my tongue.
There it is.
Tip of my tongue. Home of Missouri University. Wichita, Kansas. I mean, Kansas City's in Missouri. It could happen.
Yeah. Yeah, why not?
I just wanted to be... I knew Wichita State was in Wichita.
I had a feeling.
Okay. Someone's going to like be like, hey, you're stupid. I'm like, yes, I am. Anyway.
Do we have more on this other than just like a combination of relief and awe and joy?
You talked about the defense. We complained about the refs. We mentioned the offensive issues. You know, the one thing that was disappointing to me is Simpson didn't really create a whole lot. So I deeply missed Big Ten tournament Xavier Simpson in these two games.
Yeah.
Where he was just, he didn't even try to get to the bucket, really.
As if, I mean, he was mostly doing, I thought Houston did a great job of forcing drives to the baseline. And most everything that Michigan got was they were having to, like the late play that Simpson had the ball tipped out of bounds on. When he was trying to feed it to Wagner in the corner, that was more the type of penetration that Houston was forcing than anything where you could get into the middle.
So they tried the pick and pop, and they hit it a couple times, and then Houston started overplaying it a great deal. So you try the pick and pop, and then you've got that big rushing out on Mo Wagner.
Sure.
If you're X, I mean, you've got to get to the hoop.
Yeah, I agree. I also think Houston did a pretty darn good job of defending those pick and rolls. I mean, they do have a very good defense. They have a quick defense because they're not big.
Because they're all 6'1".
Yeah. So I wasn't shocked, especially in a game where Simpson's got to use so much of his energy on defense. And he goes 37 minutes in this one because Deron Simmons gets out there for 3 minutes and almost costs them the game. I mean,
that's a little overstated.
It's a slight overstate, but that was very nearly a backbreaker at that moment, and it was from him just completely taking a nap. On the other hand, he did have a very nice drop-off assist to Mo Wagner. It wasn't all bad, but I mean, when Simpson's going 37 minutes and playing as balls to the wall as he had to play on defense, you might sacrifice a bit of offense there. And I thought Houston was just a very good defensive team in this game inside the arc. And then Michigan misses a highly unusual number of threes.
Yeah. And then, of course, at the very end of the game, they miss two absolute bunnies to set up the finale.
Yeah, I mean...
So the putback that Matthews has that bounces on the rim, I think literally four times before deciding it's not going to go down.
It was Jordan Morgan versus Indiana-esque.
Yes, and that is exactly what everybody in the room said immediately.
Yeah.
And then you have Marr just beat his guy clean, get an uncontested layup at the rim.
It looks like he couldn't decide which hand to go up with, almost. I mean, I'd have a hard time explaining how else he missed that, because he does go up with his right hand from the left side.
And it was baffling to me, because I was like, that's the easiest shot he's had on a drive all year. And
yeah.
The rest of them go down.
Yeah.
And on the one hand, Michigan was very lucky to escape Houston. On the other hand, they were very unlucky to have to. Like, those two shots when they went up were probably 80% to go down.
Now, Michigan does also get a Charles Matthews three that takes a bounce off the rim where the ball ends up at like the top of the backboard.
I know, but you know, you get like...
So you get a little bit crazy bounces each way, but I think...
8 to 30.
Eight to 30. I mean, so yeah, Michigan was owed one there.
Yeah.
But man, I mean...
Also, that Zana guy banked a free throw in.
both of his free throws on that trip hit the backboard. One of them hit the rim first. So that was annoying. it's remarkable that this Michigan team can pull out games like this, because previous Beeline teams just don't. And that was a wild one.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and talk about the Montana game, which is still going on.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well-known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Hey, Brian, I want you to know something. Icicles are pretty.
They're pretty wasteful. If you have icicles, chances are you have cold rooms. Here's what you need to do. You need to call Ecotelligent Homes for a comprehensive home energy audit. They will find the source of the issue. Their licensed teams will install the fixes. They will help you qualify for the right local rebates, and they even offer financing. Ecotelligent Homes is an award-winning DTE Energy and Consumers Trade ally. Call 248-291-7815. Or visit their website at ecotelligenthomes.com.
Yeah,
now we will discuss the Montana game, which has just ended. And it turns out it is the least fun 14-point tournament victory in Michigan history.
Yeah. Possibly any program's history. Good Lord.
I don't want to toot the old horn here, but I think I got this pretty correct.
You did call this a preview about the way they were playing the pick and roll and how that might really turn this ugly.
And also the fact that they just couldn't score against high major opponents.
That too. I mean, that Michigan was very likely to lock them down, but also that Michigan, especially with the layoff and this, you know, blitz the ball handler all out strategy, which forces Michigan to run 30% of their offense through Charles Matthews. It does put a ceiling on Michigan's offense when they're able to execute it like that, especially when you also have Xavier Simpson getting into foul trouble early, so you don't even have your normal point guard out there.
And we did talk a little bit about Jerron Simmons not having a great 3 minutes against Houston, but he was critical in the first half of this game.
An enormous, enormous stretch for him, you know, drops in a quick 6 points, hits some tough layups when Michigan is not really getting anything going and is having trouble even finding somebody willing to attack, and he does that. That was a huge stretch for him, and it was nice to see for a guy who transferred to Michigan specifically so he could have a tournament moment.
Yeah,
he did have one.
He did. And then, I mean, this is all about the defense again. So,
yeah, 0.71 points per possession for Montana.
One of the things that jumped out to me is that Montana was so desperate and so out of ideas that they were like, all right, at this point, we're going to try to post up our 6'8 big sky bigs on John Teske.
Yeah.
And that didn't go well. So there.
No, one of them goes 1 for 6, another goes 2 for 5. That went poorly.
And, you know,
Teske gets 2 blocks and a steal and probably affects like 4 or 5 more shots.
And there was the clock issue, which I think we'll get into more, but the clock issue turns a potential Mo 3-pointer that he missed, but I don't know if he was reacting to the whistle there, into a real short clock situation for Michigan. And
it's a dumb way to reset it because, you know, you can't expect Xavier Simpson to know that the clock has stopped.
Yeah, and I
he's playing the possession while, you know, you glance up at the clock. If you're staring at the clock, you're about to get the ball stolen from you. So you play the possession. I mean, I don't know why they don't just reset it to when the clock stopped.
We're talking about this in a little bit. I have a story I'm telling.
Okay.
I'm telling a story. So I complain about this on Twitter, as is my wont, and a woman replies to me, it doesn't really matter because Montana's only going to score 6 more points in this game. And she was close to correct. And that's exactly how it felt. It felt like these guys had absolutely no way to do anything other than like put up some ugly shots and hope they go in.
Yeah, I mean, their best offense was taking Michael Aguine and just throwing him at the basket. And sometimes that worked because he's pretty quick. He was the only guy on their team to crack a 100 offensive rating, and he got 101. Yeah. So when your best strategy is to have a guy try to drive on Xavier Simpson at John Teske, good luck.
Yeah, and then, the offensive side of the ball. This kind of feels like talking about the football team. Except they win games.
Yeah.
They're in the Sweet 16.
Yeah. And I have a lot more faith in the offensive brain trust.
But some similarities.
This weekend, certainly. Yeah.
So Charles Matthews is the KenPom MVP with a 90-0 rating.
Yes. And that's totally legitimate. I mean, this was a game where you needed somebody who could just barely scrape below average. And it's in like the O rating doesn't really capture fully his contributions here because in a game that sludges down the way this one does, he goes 7 for 10 on twos. He misses a few threes, which will drag down your O rating.
5 turnovers.
And he does have 5 turnovers, but those turnovers are not.
They were bad. I didn't like them.
They weren't great, like, but there were turnovers where they needed him to be aggressive. You can't have him being hesitant. That's been a problem for him this year. So in a game where they're basically forcing you to just kick it to him in that on the wing and have him attack. I'd much rather a guy lose his dribble and have kind of a scrum in the paint and then have the ball ripped away eventually than give away the ball on a bad pass.
Well,
And with the way they were pressuring, like, those turnovers did not lead to transition opportunities on the other end.
I think it's more of a limitation of the whole team than it is Matthews, because Matthews gets put in a situation where there's 10 seconds left and it's like, go do something.
Yes.
And that's not his game. And when Michigan was able to devolve Matthews' usage to like 16, 17%, he was efficient at that rate. But I think that's kind of the cap on it. So whenever he's getting to 31, as he did.
We don't want to see Matthews hitting that kind of usage again for the rest of this tournament. It would not go well against a Sweet 16 caliber team.
And then the other thing is that I think three or four of Matthews' buckets were dunks in kind of that period where
they weren't guarding the baseline cut.
Well, yeah, I mean, Montana was trapping really hard, and Michigan was doing a good job of getting it to Wagner, and then Wagner would hit Matthews for the easy, maybe one dribble dunk.
Yeah.
So it's good that Michigan had that together, but it was more Michigan as a team creating those shots than Matthews as an individual.
Yeah. I do appreciate that Montana broke that out in the very first game of the tournament, though, because it's something Michigan hasn't faced a whole lot this year, certainly not with that level of aggression. And Beilein did say afterwards that he had them prepared for a lot of different pick-and-roll looks, not just that one. So hopefully this week they work on a couple more adjustments that maybe don't involve running the offense completely through Matthews if a team decides to aggressively trap like they did there.
Well, and then the other thing is you have Rockman with 11 points on
a lot of attempts.
Like 14 shot equivalents.
Yeah.
Two assists, three turnovers. Like, he struggled badly in both these games. He's, I think, 1 of 12 from 3 in these two games.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, this has been Michigan's most reliable, most efficient, most consistent player for the whole year, and he laid two eggs this weekend. And Michigan managed to escape thanks to their defense, but you can't survive against UNC unless Rockman is playing well.
No, they will certainly need more from him. They'll need more from Wagner, most likely. I mean, this was not entirely his fault, but he was kind of taken out of this weekend largely.
Yeah.
The good news is that this is another game where they get pretty big contributions off the bench. They're at least able to make some significant adjustments where if somebody's having an off game, they really do have other options. And Duncan Robinson finding his shot has obviously been quite massive. They did get some backup point guard play that was better than expected this weekend.
Yeah.
Shout out to Eli Brooks for hitting a rather improbable floater in that Montana game. They're not winning in any way that we're used to, but
they are winning.
They're winning, and it's a way that tournament teams get, you know, work their way in a. Hey, this is how you claw your way through a tournament, is just by playing tremendous defense.
You could, I don't know.
It'd be nice if they scored more.
Annihilate people by 20.
That was fun, too.
The Burke team did that.
They did.
I enjoyed that.
I liked that a lot.
I liked that. It was less stressful.
There was a lot of teeth grinding this weekend.
A lot of teeth grinding.
But
it ended with an overdose of swag.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships, and we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
Hi, this is Seth from MGoBlog.
So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was just it was a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops the loan to different underwriters, so we were a priority for them. And he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we didn't have to keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage. And he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-531-9950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street, or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog, and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending, and MLS number 1161358.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
On the grill of my lowrider, guns on both sides, right above the gold wires. I 4-5 them, kill a nigga on my soul to really do it. That's the true meaning of a ghost rider. 10 G's to take your daughter out of Air Forces. Believe you me, homie, I know all about losses. I'm from Compton, where the wrong colors, be cautious. One phone call, I had your body dumped in Marcy. I stay strapped like car seats, been banging since my little nigga Rob got killed for his Barclays.
Hey, Ace, you were gonna put a nut in some hummus. What kind of nut would it be?
I'm thinking pine nut.
Pine nut. Oh, delicious pine nuts when they're toasted and roasted and ghosted. That's not a thing you do with a pine nut. I don't know. But Lantana Hummus does. They have a white bean hummus with pine nut and herb topping, or herb topping, if you prefer that pronunciation. It's topped with roasted pine nuts and herbs, as you probably can tell. It's brimming with rich flavor and smooth texture. It makes an excellent companion to vegetables, crackers, or pretzels, and is sure to be a hit with everyone at your table, Ace.
And it's not made of kittens.
We almost got... Poor marketing woman. Anyway...
We did a good job for most of us.
Speaking of wild emotional swings.
I'm sorry.
No, it's a good segue now.
Yeah,
so I'm
it worked.
Speaking of wild emotional swings. So our top five here is wild emotional swings. I said it didn't have to be sports, but all of mine are sports because that's who I am.
Yeah, I tried to. I included one that's not sports.
Okay.
Because I was really making an effort there. Also, last night's the Jordan Poole shot is not
eligible
because obviously that was the inspiration for
right. This is a top five in honor of the Jordan Poole shot, so it can't be. So it's like we named the award after it.
Yeah.
Right. So I did delete one non-sports one, and you could infer whatever you want. Ace, your number five.
Wagner exits, Donnell enters. Pretty much any time.
Oh, yeah. Just kind of in general.
Just like whenever.
That's my like shtick.
I know it's your shtick, but man, I was covering that. I was up close and personal watching Beeline in his face as Donnell would run down the bench to check in.
There was a certain kind of oh no slow motion aspect to that every time.
Yeah,
and I think. And
since it would usually come after like a foul on Wagner that I would usually be upset about, and you know, and a lot of times Wagner was playing well, and sometimes that cost Michigan the game.
Right, And I think it was really reinforced this weekend because Wagner picks up quick fouls on both games, goes to the bench. And I'm like...
Part of me is like, you know, we need to step it up on defense, so let's go.
Or like, that's annoying, but...
It's fine. Well,
it's fine.
Yeah.
And it turned out to be fine.
Yeah. So it would, that emotional swing was hammered home, yeah, this weekend because I did not have it.
My number five was the Burke steal on Keith Appling.
That's a good one.
Because this was a game that Michigan had well in hand. They were going to win this. I think they were up 10 points at some point late.
And they start gacking it up.
And
gacking it up to a Michigan State team that nobody wants to lose to.
And that's the Keith Appling. And Michigan State is coming down the floor. And they're still down two, but they have an opportunity to tie or win. And every Michigan fan is like, this is how we lose this. This is how we lose this. This is how we're going to die. And they don't even get into their offense.
Nope.
Because Trey Burke has the amazing troll face steal. Goes down. Scores a basket. Michigan gets a glorious victory thanks to that very particular Burke steal that he had.
Yeah.
So that was a good one.
That was the Burkean move there.
Ace, your number four.
I tried to include some things that weren't Michigan here, and I got one, which is back in 2002, the Red Wings in the first round series against Vancouver. This is the team that is so loaded with Hall of Famers, it is absolutely unfair, and yet they go down 0-2 in the series to Vancouver, losing both games at home to start the playoffs. They're tied 1-1 nearing the very end of the second period. And then Nick Lidstrom rips a center ice slapper that beats Dan Cloutier. And the Wings don't lose another game in the series. And that went from, like, we're about to see, like, a historic, this team gets upset and everybody should be fired. Like, we have possibly, I think, 9 or 10 Hall of Famers on that team. And they're about to lose to the 8 seed in the first round. And then a center ice goal flips the entire thing. And then they go on and win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, I don't. This isn't actually on my list, but another one like that is the Tayshaun Prince block.
Yes, that's a very good one. I kind of am now upset I did not include that.
I skipped a Franz Ferdinand show to watch that game.
Good choice.
It was like, that was worth it.
Yep.
Which is always a...
It's a gamble.
It's a gamble.
Because you usually know what you're getting with a concert. You never know what you're getting with a sporting event.
Yep. My number four is Dave schedules Appalachian State because, you know, you're already getting pretty suspicious of this dude and you're like, this is, I have an ambivalent to negative relationship with my athletic director and that is unfortunate. And after that, it was like,
there was no more ambivalence.
Burn it all. Burn it to the ground. All must die.
Yeah. I mean, on the plus side. That happened.
It did.
So,
but
it took events
for a non-sporting event to just flip a switch like that is.
It was just an astonishing level of like you just completely don't get it.
Yeah. That was
for some reason. I'm not surprised you worked Dave Brandon in here somehow.
I mean,
I worked Mark Don Ellen, so I
don't want to work him in, but I just remember that day and I'm like, our athletic department is run by a total idiot.
Yep.
And then he goes and gets paid $12 million to not do anything at Toys R Us, which is already getting run into the ground.
On the flip side, the day he got fired was a heck of an emotional swing too.
Yeah, man, we got a Daley Harding commit. Ace number three.
This is my one non-sports one. It is every single New Year's Eve in college. This is not even a specific thing. What? It is just amateur night, and people just
amateur night.
It always
people are drinking.
People are drinking way too much. They don't know how to handle it. It's New Year's Eve. People go in with these massive expectations about how this is supposed to be the greatest night out of the year.
Yeah,
and guaranteed half the people you go out with end up crying by the end of the night. It's just how it goes. Crying or puking. Or both.
I mean, what we did, we had parties ultimate swank, not in college, but after college, where we just invite everybody over and make a bunch of food. It was awesome. And everybody had to dress up in like suits and stuff.
That's solid.
Although I did have a complete amateur night. The last time I threw up from drinking was a New Year's Eve.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a bad one because I tried to clean it up with towels that I left in the sink. And then we put the towels outside, and then they stayed there for 6 months. And,
oh.
And then you discovered the towels in August or something.
No. So, did they get buried in snow or something?
Yes, they did. Yeah. And then, but then in August, it's like, what's this? Oh, my God. So anyway,
wow.
I learned my lesson.
Yeah. So least. Yeah, I mean, New Year's Eve can provide some emotional and physical swings.
Yes, it can.
And
were you upset when they could no longer make the 2010 glasses, like with the two circles?
I was never one for the novelty glasses. Okay. I will say that. But
my number three, I think, is the 2004 Ohio State game.
Okay.
Where they're up 9 points.
Mm-hmm.
And Michigan has the ball on like the 40.
Mm-hmm.
And Lloyd Carr calls a screen,
mm-hmm.
which gained 6 yards. And then they punt it
mm-hmm.
out of a field goal formation.
Mm-hmm.
And then they play the softest ass prevent defense in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And Ohio State immediately scores. And then
the
Michigan
small part of us dies.
Goes run, 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 punt. And then Ohio State goes down and kicks a field goal to win that game.
It was unpleasant.
And I was like, yeah. I remember like as Michigan got a big play and they got down. I'm like, all right, we just need a field goal. We'll go up 9. That's 2 scores. We're good. And then they were good.
When you out-conservative trestle.
And then they...
It's real bad.
And then they did that. And I was so angry.
It's not fun.
I was so angry. Answer number two.
The shot. In a much happier.
That is also my number two.
I mean, yeah. Talk about emotional swings. Deep pull-up from 35 feet.
Yeah.
We are quite familiar with that feeling now from last night, if we needed a reminder.
Well, the thing is, the shot had to be followed up with additional shots.
It did. This was only one to send it into overtime.
So Burke was like, all right, I'm going to send it overtime. And then he was also like, also I'm going to hit like 3 more of these in overtime.
Yeah. That was a different kind of emotional swing, because instead of going completely from like despondency to joy, there is joy, but there's also like, oh God, there's 5 more minutes of this, yeah. and this game has already killed me.
Yeah.
But turned out quite nicely.
Ace, you're number one.
Under the Lights 1. I mean, talk about a game with, several
yes.
emotional swings.
Crippling.
And for me, I mean, that was the first year that I worked at EMGO and was covering games that was back when I just sat in the press box and tweeted and didn't even write game recaps. So, and that was also back when they let you down on the field at the end of the fourth quarter.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It's been a long time. So I'm about to get in the elevator to go down, and that is when Denard throws the interception.
Okay.
And so I'm like, I almost don't even get in the elevator, because it's like, do I even want to be on the field for the end of this? Because I just went from like thinking this is going to be awesome to thinking this might be real sad. And then, you know, get down on the field, and a few minutes later, there's Roy Rountree like 40 feet away from me catching that touchdown pass in the corner. And that was a pretty cool emotional swing, and I may not have been entirely professional afterwards. But neither was like everybody else.
Don't say that to me.
I mean, it was just running around cheering. Everybody else was doing it too. We all lost our minds.
We're bloggists.
We were all anti Don Crickying it.
We're bloggists. We have to maintain a level of professionalism in professional situations that is more professional than the professionals.
Fair enough. I was a rookie.
Except that one time when
I'm a vet now.
Berated the Free Press people after the article. My number one is Go Go USA, Landon Donovan versus Algeria.
Nice. Okay.
We're in the Buffalo Wild Wings, and of course, this is a if you tie the game, you're out of the World Cup, and if you win the game, you are top of the group. And
that was a rather big swing.
It was, and you know, this I've watched that so many times that it's one of those calls that I've memorized. I think I've mentioned this before when we did the greatest calls.
Yes, that was definitely on there.
So it was only enhanced by the call, and yeah, I left off the Trinidad and Tobago game. But that was also a candidate.
Fair enough. I like the one you went with.
Yeah, I decided I would be more happy. So I mean,
this was a happy occasion.
I have three happy ones. I have two negative ones, and that's life.
Yeah.
Unless you're Dave. That Dave, not Dave. Brandon. He has only happy event. Also, I guess Dave Brandon only has happy events because he's insane. Anyway, let's not talk about this anymore. Let's take a break. And it's time for Aces Hockey Podcast.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Girls, listen up. Torn between Saturday night and early Sunday morn. I don't know, I'm somewhere stuck in between tween. I'm out here knowing hip-hop is dead. The average nigga on my corner yelling, what the fuck you mean? See, we ain't seen the mountaintop counterclockwise. Goes to neighborhood, hand-me-downs and canned goods. Won't cut the great coupon, we got to make it run. Back to the drawing board, can't afford to lose, y'all make me yawn. /1/91, my teacher sees potential in me, sets it down, son. Now let me tell you like I heard it when I felt deserted. It wasn't no other way to word it, got my feelings murdered by the bullet of bad, the singer of sad songs to make you long for your mom and your dad. Play a clash with polka dots, I hope you ain't mad. Back up, little mama, I'm about to react.
Yep, yep, yeah. We ain't just broken the road. No, no, you don't want to see.
Welcome to Aces Hockey Podcast. We actually have Ace on this one.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Also, we welcome in our hockey correspondent, Dave.
What's
Masternak.
Up, what's up, Ryan?
Also our producer on the podcast, so...
Kind of.
Chief eye roller.
Chief, don't say that.
Yeah. Chief, we need to cut that. And then half the time I'm like, no, we're keeping it, we're keeping it.
In that voice, too.
That's actually...
That voice has made a couple appearances now.
Well, you know, that's actually my real voice. I just have to change it for general concern.
You're actually wearing a large voice modulator right now. People can't see it. It's an unfortunately non-visual podcast today.
It is.
All right. We really need video for these things.
See? Michigan has made the NCAA hockey tournament. They got the number 8 overall seed, which was good because if you're the 8 overall seed, the only switches that can happen in the bracket are good for you because you're a 2 seed, which means that your first round opponent, you deserve the number 9 and you deserve the number 1 in the second round. And Michigan did get the number 9, but they got swapped into Massachusetts.
Yes, they are going out of Massachusetts.
So they get Northeastern in the first round, which is going to be a little bit of a road game, but whatever. You know, the benefit for Michigan is instead of the number 1 overall seed, St. Cloud State, they get Cornell, which is an ECAC team that does not have the kind of scoring mojo that St. Cloud does. And ECAC teams have done fairly well in the tournament recently, but they don't really put the fear of God into me.
Just trying to forget the last time we played Cornell in the tournament.
Well, you know, it's not the same coaching regime.
That's very true.
The Stathead's favorite ranking system is called Cratch, and it has St. Cloud State the number 1 team in the country with a rating of 486 points. And Cornell is 3rd with 389. That is a big, big gap down. And Michigan has 234. So with Cratch, if you divide, if you add those up and divide, that's your chance of winning. So that's a much better matchup for Michigan, just in terms of, you know, who they get would get to play in the second round.
I think they should probably beat Northeastern first. Well, I'm hoping.
So the thing about Northeastern is they are eerily similar to Michigan's most recent tourney team. They have an explosive first line. They have a killer power play.
Yep.
And they don't have a whole lot after that. They have one defenseman who's scoring at a near point per game place, and they have a couple of guys on their second line who are decent scorers. But it's really all about their top line and their power play.
I made a list of like all the Corsi rankings for all the teams in the tournament, and they are actually the second worst in terms of puck possession at 37th in the country. So Michigan should probably see the puck a decent amount. They're right up around Notre Dame in that sense.
But they have the 3rd-ranked power play in the country.
Correct.
And they have an excellent defense. This is a little bit inflated by their schedule, which is not very good. They played a fair number of Atlantic Hockey teams, and they're 35th in schedule ranking by Cratch. Michigan, by contrast, is 13th. So they've had a little bit better record this year, but Cratch does think that they're significantly worse than Michigan, or not significantly worse, meaningfully worse. They give Michigan a 55 to 60% chance to win this game. So it's going to be a coin flip, but a slightly weighted one for Michigan if you just go by the stats.
Yeah, the other thing that does concern me a bit is they do have a pretty good freshman goalie who's putting up some solid numbers, and Michigan's run into a number of goalies that have been able to sort of steal the show.
Yeah, he's got a 932 on the season, which is top 5 in the country.
And he's also legacy. And
he's also the son of Keith Primo.
Right, right.
Which is, why is he at Northeastern?
So, Northeastern's had made the tournament a decent number of times in the last year.
You just think that, like, one of the Michigan teams would be like, hey, check us out,
yeah,
buddy.
They also have a number of drafted skaters, so it's not like they're completely
talentless. They do have some guys who are, like, 5th to 7th round guys, and those are the ones who have blown up. So Adam Gaudette is maybe the Hobie favorite. He is the leading scorer in the country this
right.
year. And their top line, all of them have double-digit power play goals. It's 11, 11, and 13. And those guys are all in the top 5 in scoring in terms of points per game nationally. They're all in the top 6 in terms of power play scoring. And, of course, Michigan has one of the worst penalty kills in the country.
Yeah, this made me a little nervous when I was looking at that they drew Northeastern just because they're playing them out in Massachusetts, which is about within an hour of campus. And they're the higher seed, and they get that. And then they get a really good power play, which is basically how Michigan has lost games over the last 2 months.
I mean, the thing about these regionals is even if there are some Northeastern fans that do make the trip, there aren't that many Northeastern fans, period. And a large portion of the tickets are going to be bought by the other Eastern teams who are in this regional. So I think the building is going to be dead because the building is always dead.
Okay.
So I don't think the home ice is really going to make much of an impact. The penalty kill thing, it either works out great for Michigan or works out poorly for Michigan. If they get a game where it's, you know, they can stay out of the box like they have done in a lot of games this year, like the Notre Dame series, you know, most of those games didn't see a power play until late in the second period. If they can stay out of the box, I think that they're going to be better than this team at 5-on-5.
Yes, I would agree with that. And that's generally what Michigan has come down to. If they can avoid penalties and they can kind of keep in check the opponent's top line, then sure. The goalie thing also does give me a cause of concern, because when Michigan gets into goalie battles, generally they end up on the short end of that by a little bit of a margin.
Yeah, I mean, it's not an awesome matchup.
No.
I mean, it's not like...
This was like going into the weekend, there were two or three teams I was keeping an eye on of looking at trying to draw, because I thought that they might be overall slightly worse or at least have less potential than a Northeastern team. We didn't get either of those teams, but like, you got to win these games, and Michigan has faced teams like this and they've played teams like this even. It's just going to be, can you stay out of the box, and will your top line be able to match theirs?
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see what the matchup is for Michigan, because it's clear that you want to shut down their top line as much as possible, and then just whatever happens with the other three lines is what happens to the other three lines. Like, who are you going to run out there against them? Like,
and this might be a situation where being the 8 and not the 9 is a big deal, because then you do have last change, and you can get Hughes and Ciccone on the ice when you want to.
Do you want to match up Hughes against the top line here? I mean, you'll have more possession against them. They'll have fewer opportunities, but those opportunities might be 2-on-1s.
Who would you like to put out against them?
I mean, the second pairing is pretty good. I don't know. Like, I don't know. That's what
I mean, I like Hughes as an offensive defenseman, but I think when you're facing two of the top five scorers in the nation, you need your best defenseman on the ice. Otherwise, you could put yourself in some perilous situations.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it'll depend on what kind of guys these are. Like, I think these are shorter, more skilled guys, not kind of power forwards. Then I do want Hughes out there, because he's going to be able to track them. He's not going to get juked out of his skates and fall over.
Well, Ciccone's bigger, too. So if they have...
Ciccone is bigger.
If they have a bigger guy, I mean, you have a man to match up with him.
Yeah. And then the other half of the bracket is Cornell. And Cornell is always the same. They're an Ivy team. They have super old players. They play this lock system. They don't get a lot of scoring from anybody. Their goalie always has a ridiculous save percentage, because they're like the Ron Mason Michigan State teams, except their high end isn't really that high, so they don't have anyone who's at a point per game. And that's even though their top scorer has a shooting percentage of almost 18%, which is almost certainly unsustainable.
Yeah.
So... This is a team that, you know, Michigan is going to look in and they're going to be like, okay, we played this team four times. They were Notre Dame.
Yes.
And I feel like that's a good matchup for this team in a way that previous Michigan teams under Red Berenson have not been.
Yeah, they will have the puck. The only thing is Cornell has given up 49 goals in 32 games. And some of that could be schedule adjusted. Obviously, because they're not in one of maybe the top three conferences.
Well, I mean, they have a 95 even strength save percentage, so it's
right,
it's pretty good.
Goals are going to be at a premium, I feel like, if Michigan is going to win that game.
I mean, they do suffer on the penalty kill. So I mean, their save percentage is 85 on the penalty kill, so there's a huge, huge gap. So it's, again, it's like, take advantage of your power plays and try to stay out of the box.
Cornell's power play is down. It might even be worse than Michigan's. I think I have them at 17% right here.
Yeah.
They have 6 drafted players, but I think their strength is definitely on the defensive end and in net. Like you said, it looks like a similar matchup to Notre Dame.
If it's not Cornell, it'll be BU. And BU is a completely different nut to crack. They're super talented. They have a ton of high draft picks on their team. They don't seem very well coached, because they barely skated into this tournament by winning the hockey's playoff. And, I mean, they're dangerous, but they're just kind of loopy. Like, they should be much, like, BU should be killing it with the way they recruit, and they just kind of backed in the tournament this year. And like, they, you know, Anthony, our buddy, always brings up the Jack Eichel year. They were one of the worst teams in the country when Eichel was off the ice. So, like, I don't really know if they're getting well coached.
They're probably the weirdest team in college hockey because, like you said, they get everyone. They have the most drafted skaters of any team in the tournament by four. They have 12 drafted skaters, and they, and I think a decent number are, like, top three rounds, too.
Yeah.
So it's not like they're all a bunch of seventh-rounders.
And they were 12-8-4 in Hockey East this year.
Yeah, they're probably the hottest team in the country because they went through some good teams to get there. They've beaten Northeastern, they've beaten Providence, they've beaten BC just to get into the tournament. They needed to win the tournament to qualify, which they did. Their penalty kill is also down around where Michigan's is at 79%. Their power play is marginal, about 22. Goaltending is similar to Michigan's.
Yeah.
It's around 2.5 for GAA and 0.916 for save percentage. I don't understand how this team doesn't just score lots of goals.
No, I mean, you look at the names on these teams. You have Jordan Greenway, you have Brady Tkachuk, who's, yes, that Tkachuk. This is one of the most talented teams in the country, but they're a four seed for a reason. It's not because they just switched coaches, right?
You look at their numbers and you think, oh, this is a dream matchup. This is who you want to pick because they don't match up well against Michigan in that regard. But then you look at who you're actually playing against, and you're like, well, this team could win the title. Like, if these guys hit their potential and play like they're NHL players, like probably half of them could be, then you're like, who's going to stop them?
Well, and that's kind of the story of the tournament. North Dakota's not in this tournament, BC isn't in this tournament, and Minnesota's not in this tournament.
Right, by what, 1,000th?
Well, there were
percentage.
There were six games. There were six games on Saturday, and all of them had to go a particular way for Minnesota to get bounced, and they all did.
Womp womp.
Which is.
And if there's a team that has more draft picks than Boston, it's Minnesota.
It's Minnesota. So, I mean, Michigan isn't the most talented team. They're not. They're not playing the best. They're probably not going to do it. But I don't see any matchup where Michigan's going to walk in there and be like, "This is like the North Dakota game."
Also, Hockey Plinko.
Also, Hockey Plinko. It works in their favor this year, where they could kind of fart their way to the Frozen Four if they just stay out of the damn box.
Yeah, the box is a big thing.
That's it. It's like, just don't give up penalty kill goals. You'll be better 5-on-5 than all these teams.
I think so.
But they're going to give up.
You can't not take penalties,
yeah,
right? And Michigan is too sloppy. They're not as disciplined. They're better than they used to be, but they'll still take silly offensive zone penalties or after the whistle penalties, and then, you know, it's kind of frustrating when that's how you lose. So if they tighten up those and they just play regular hockey and don't get outside their own brains in that sense, then, I mean, this team can go to St. Paul.
Yeah, but I think this is just gravy time, right? Like, they're in the tournament. That's what I was hoping for at the beginning of the year.
I'd like to win one game.
It'd be nice to win, but like, I'm not going to be upset if they get bounced. If they get bounced 6-0, I'll be upset. But if some puck bounces and they get out, I'm like, all right, that's...
Yeah, I mean, whenever you get unlucky, it's kind of like that. But
it'd be nice if Michigan hockey could get lucky once.
you're a home seed. Let's get at least a game.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see what happens this weekend.
Saturday, 4:30, I believe.
Saturday at 4:30, he believes. Say goodbye, Ace.
Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Ace Ambender, along with Brian Cook. Shout out to Jordan Poole. Shout out to Vuvuzela. I want them to have an enthusiasm off.